4. Repetition. The sudden wind brought rain. A cold rain on a cold wind. Journalists and schoolteachers mean well, but they can be fatally bossy. One of their strangely arbitrary rules forbids us to use the same word twice on the same page. Thus, they drive us to the thesaurus in desperate searches for far-fetched synonyms and substitutes. The thesaurus is invaluable when your mind goes blank on the word you need, or when you really must vary the word choice, but use it discreetly. The dictionary word, the word that really isn't your word, may stick out of your prose like a flamingo in a flock of pigeons, and it will change the tone. She'd had enough cream, enough sugar, enough tea. Isn't the same as she'd had enough cream, an ample sufficiency of sugar, and a plenitude of tea. Repetition is awkward when it happens too often, emphasizing a word for no reason. He was studying in his study. The book he was studying was Plato. This kind of childish echo occurs when you aren't rereading as you write. Everybody does it now and then. It's easy to fix in revision by finding a synonym or a different phrasing. He was in his study, reading Plato and making notes, or whatever. But to make a rule never to use the same word twice in one paragraph, or to state flatly that repetition is to be avoided, is to go right against the nature of narrative prose. Repetition of words, of phrases, of images. Repetition of things said. Near repetition of events. Echoes, reflections, variations. From the grandmother telling a folk tale to the most sophisticated novelist. All narrators use these devices, and the skillful use of them is a great part of the power of prose. Prose can't rhyme and chime and repeat a beat as poetry can. Or if it does, it had better be subtler about it than the first half of this sentence. The rhythms of prose, and repetition is the central means of achieving rhythm, are usually hidden or obscure, not obvious. They may be long and large, involving the whole shape of a story, the whole course of events in a novel. So large they're hard to see, like the shape of the mountains when you're driving on a mountain road. But the mountains are there. Example 9. The Thunder Badger is sacred or ritual narrative, an oral form that predates the distinction of prose from poetry. All such narration is completely fearless about repetition, using it openly and often, both to shape the story and to give the words their due majesty and power, as in an incantation. This Paiute story isn't heavy-duty sacred, just ordinarily sacred. It should be told, like most stories, only in the winter. I apologize for retelling it out of season. It really must be read aloud. The Thunder Badger, from W. L. Marsden, Northern Paiute Language of Oregon, a word-by-word translation, slightly adapted by U. K. L. He, the thunder, when he is angry that the earth has dried up, that he has no moist earth, when he wants to make the earth moist because the water has dried up. He, the thunder, the rain chief, lives on the surface of the clouds. He has frost. He, the thunder sorcerer, appears like a badger. The rain sorcerer, he, the thunder. After he digs, he lifts up his head to the sky. Then the clouds come. Then the rain comes. Then there is cursing of earth. The thunder comes. The lightning comes. Evil is spoken. He, the real badger, only he, white stripes on his nose, here on his back. He it is, only the badger, this kind. He, the thunder sorcerer, that does not like dried up earth when he is digging, when he is scratching this way. Then raising his head to the sky, he makes the rain. Then the clouds come. Folktales often repeat themselves exuberantly, both in the language and in the structure. Consider the Three Bears, with its cascade of European triads. Things in Europe happen in threes, things in Native American folktales more often in fours. Stories written to read aloud to children use a lot of repetition. Kipling's Just-So stories, see example one, are a splendid example of repetition used as incantation, as a structural device, and to make you and the child laugh. Repetition is often funny. The first time David Copperfield hears Mr. Micawber say, "Something is certain to turn up," it doesn't mean much to David or to us. By the time we've heard Mr. Micawber, forever hopeful in his incompetence, say the same or nearly the same words throughout the long book, it is very funny. The reader waits for it, as for the inevitable and delightful repetition of a musical phrase in Haydn. But also, every time Mr. Micawber says it, it means more. It gathers weight. The darkness underneath the funniness grows always a little darker. In the next example, where a glaringly bright scene sets the mood for a long, dark novel, a single word is repeated like a hammer blow. Example 10. Charles Dickens from Little Dorrit. 30 years ago, Marseille lay burning in the sun one day. Everything in Marseille, and about Marseille, had stared at the fervid sky and been stared at in return, until a staring habit had become universal there. Strangers were stared out of countenance by staring white houses, staring white walls, staring tracts of arid road, staring hills from which verdure was burnt away, the only things to be seen, not fixedly staring and glaring, were the vines drooping under their load of grapes. The universal stare made the eyes ache. Towards the distant line of Italian coast, indeed, it was a little relieved by light clouds of mist, slowly rising from the evaporation of the sea, but it softened nowhere else. Far away, the staring roads, deep in dust, stared from the hillside, stared from the hollow, stared from the interminable plain. Far away, the dusty vines overhanging wayside cottages, and the monotonous wayside avenues of parched trees without shade, drooped beneath the stare of earth and sky. Repetition, of course, isn't limited to words or phrases. Structural repetition is the similarity of the events in a story, happenings that echo one another. It involves the whole of a story or novel. For a marvelous example of it, you might reread the first chapter of Jane Eyre and think about the rest of the book as you do. If you haven't read Jane Eyre, do. Then you can think about it for the rest of your life. The first chapter is full of foreshadowing, the introduction of images and themes that will return throughout the book. For example, we meet Jane as a shy, silent, self-respecting child, the outsider in an unloving household who takes refuge in books, pictures, and nature. An older boy who bullies and abuses her goes too far at last, and she turns on him and fights back. Nobody takes her part, and she's locked in an upstairs room that she's been told is haunted. Well, grown-up Jane is going to be the shy outsider in another household, where she'll stand up against Mr. Rochester's bullying, finally be forced to rebel and find herself utterly alone. And there's an upstairs room in that house which is truly haunted. The first chapters of many great novels bring in an amazing amount of material that will be, in one way and another, with variations, repeated throughout the book. The similarity of this incremental repetition of word, phrase, image, and event in prose to recapitulation and development in musical structure is real and deep. Exercise 4, Parts 1 and 2. Again and again and again. I can't suggest plots for these. The nature of the exercise doesn't allow it. Part 1, Verbal Repetition. Write a paragraph of narrative, 150 words, that includes at least 3 repetitions of a noun, verb, or adjective, a noticeable word, not an invisible one like was, said, did. This is a good exercise for in-class writing. When you read it aloud, don't tell people what the repeated word is. Do they hear it? Part 2, Structural Repetition. Write a short narrative, 350 to 1,000 words, in which something is said or done, and then something is said or done that echoes or repeats it, perhaps in a different context, or by different people, or on a different scale. This can be a complete story, if you like, or a fragment of narrative. In critiquing, you might concentrate on the effectiveness of the repetitions and their obviousness or subtlety. To think or talk about after writing, were you comfortable at first with the idea of deliberately repeating words and constructions and events? Did you get more comfortable with it while doing it? Did the exercise bring out any particular feeling, tone, or subject matter or style in your work? And can you say what it was? I'm not sure how free the nonfiction writer is to use structural repetition. To force unlike events into a repetitive pattern certainly would be cheating. But to be aware of an existing pattern in the events of a life surely is one of the memoirist's goals. Look for examples of structural repetition in fiction and nonfiction. An awareness of how repetition, foreshadowing, and echoing contribute to the structure and impetus of narrative can add greatly to your appreciation of a good story.